Hi, you're listening to Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, Hump of the Week, 7 at 7, archive interview with today's guest, Sophie B of Colour Me Sophie B.
Good evening, Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, and welcome to another episode of the Hump of the Week, 7 at 7. My esteemed guest tonight is the sassy lady from Solihull in Birmingham, Sophie B. How you doing, Sophie? Sophie's career came Sophie came into my attention to a high performance educator when through the lockdown where some of us crazy people decided to enroll and do some more education and become educators in different platforms or learn a little bit how to do this online. But Sophie is two and a half years. Salon has only opened 2.5 years. It's fantastic success. And what I love about it is she's homegrown our team. And that's special to me. It's grow from within. That's something that I really want to get into chat to you about. You've 25 years experience in the industry. Like many were thrown in by your parents as a young Saturday girl to get you out of their hair. And I just feel you're a breath of fresh air for any young salon owner because you've So Colour Me Sophie B is your salon.
Yeah.
And you just launched Colour Me Sophie B Pro, which is your online education, which is selling out at a massive rate. And I think when people see at the end of this interview, they'll know why it's selling out.
And
they'll know why you're busy because you are, as you say, there is only one Sophie B. And so I want to say, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of Colour Me B, Colour Me Sophie B. Now, so do you want to say a quick hello before we launch into your 7 at 7?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm on Irish waters. This is a first.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did say to off camera, you were the first people in Paris salon on UK, but we're not. We forgot about the lovely Chris Moody.
I'm the second.
He beat you to it. We're the first female salon owner from across the water. We want Soul Brothers and Sisters to be international because that's how we learn. You know, the one thing we all learn is that the world of owning the salon is the same, whether it's in San Diego, Sydney, or Solihull.
I hope you can understand my dodgy Birmingham accent.
Oh, no, we love it. We love it. I like a Birmingham accent. Any good? No. Right, so we're going to kick off with your first question. And why did you choose hairdressing as a career, Sophie?
So it was a little bit by accident. So obviously, you know, I'm a bit gobby. So when I was younger, my mum and dad were just getting so irritated with me. And my mum was like, look, you just got to get a job. Go and get a job. You're 14. You're driving me crazy. You need to like do something. So after school one day, I rocked up to the local cool salon that there was. It was called Simon Paul. And I basically got my elbows out, went in there, went, I want to work here. So can I work here? And it kind of happened like that. So I went in for my first day. I remember, I think I was like literally there for about 10 minutes. And I turned around to one of the head stylists. And I was like, do you actually get paid for this? They were like, yeah, it's a job, you know, like hairdressing, it's a job. And I remember like, I just loved the music and the atmosphere and the people and the fashion and the buzz of the place. Oh, I just absolutely loved it. And I got home, got paid 10 quid or something for the day. I didn't care. I didn't care if I got paid or not. It was bloody brilliant. And I got home to my mum and dad and I literally was like, I think I know what I want to be. I want to be a hairdresser, you know? And, you know, the rest is history, really. I worked sort of like late nights after school and things like that from the age of 14 to 16. But back then, because I'm a complete dinosaur, right? So this would have been like early 90s. I did the college syllabus before I left school. So by the time I was 16, I was qualified.
So you went straight into a salon as a stylist?
A really crap one, but yeah.
We can all share that going back to the day. You know, I think the opportunities that are available for young people today to be the best they can be. You're there, whereas we had to grab onto every little bit that was there, and some of them were a little bit, some of our teachers were a little bit antiquated, and some were excellent. You know,
don't forget back then, right? Way back then, colour wasn't a big thing. Okay, it was just sort of coming in. It was still a lot of perms, just grey coverage, but it wasn't very fancy. And so, because it was old school, right, the colour was seen as a bit like the dog's body's job to do. Unless you had scissors, you weren't very good. So my job when I left school was to do all the colours. So I was kind of thrown into the world of colour. I didn't actually know what I was doing, but, you know, whatever, I did all right. Very busy, because I was the only one that liked doing it in the salon. So I got loads of clients.
It's funny, actually. I remember that. I always remember one of the younger stylists when I started, because I was 21 when I started, and she said to me, whatever you do, don't get stuck in that colour section.
Yeah, massive.
They'll leave you there. Usually, if you're a guy, they'll leave you stuck in the coloured section. And there'll be eight girls perming.
Yeah.
And there was myself and a guy, John, stuck in the colour section.
Yeah.
Bags on people's heads and prodding at them with a hook.
Yeah,
for those of us who remember that.
Yeah, I bloody do. I'm really good with a highlighting hook, you know.
I always remember the L'Oreal technician coming in, and Peter was there, manager at the time, saying to me, come over here, you. And the stylists were rebelling against it. Why would you do this? It's so slow, this weaving thing. And people won't pay for that. £60? No, they'll pay 25. And that was the early 80s, you know what I mean? And I remember he going, Greg, you're put it, show him how to do it. And he done it. And my nerves were gone. My hand was just shaking. Like, that's all the stylists were watching. They forced you. And she goes, oh, you'll be great at this. Why, you have a natural shake. I said, well, it's just nerves, you know? Yeah, it's amazing how colour is so, like, without colour, we wouldn't exist now in salons. That's the backbone of it, isn't it? You know, it's face line on a perm roller these days.
I know. Well, I'm still friends with my boss, my first ever boss. Yeah, we fell out for a long time, but then we made friends again when I become a salon owner. So it's kind of done like full circle now. Yeah. But I just loved it. And I know it was old school. And I know now, looking back, it wasn't very trendy or anything like that. But it was such good training. It was such good, you know, learning all about community, you know. And some of those clients had gone to that salon for about 50 years. Mm. You know, all the teachings that I had for those 4 years I was there, you know, was a blessing, really.
Like, I think I've seen somewhere on your website that said you felt old school values.
Yeah, massively.
You know what I mean? Like,
so it that's, came from there.
Yeah.
So when that's I talk it, about that, it's like
it might not be the salon that you envisage you own yourself, but you know the culture and some of the standards that are there you're going to take that might not be to do with a scissors and comb.
Yeah, massively.
Just how to look after people. So then that leads into lovely. So why were you crazy enough to become a salon owner then?
Well, the thing is literally, like, I've been with my husband since I was 18, right? And so he's like been on at me and on at me and on at me. So I'm 40 now, for all that time to become a salon owner. And I never wanted to be. I just didn't want to do that at all. I was scared. I was so frightened. And I thought, like, oh, I'm not going to be good at managing people, and, you know, all the stress, and, you know, is it going to stop me doing hair, and, you know, all that kind of thing. And then it wasn't until basically the last salon I was at before I opened my salon, I kind of like got to the point there where, you know, I was about 37, right? And I was thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I really need to be thinking about the next kind of 20 years and my career, and how long do I want to be behind the chair and all this kind of thing, you know, to give me a bit more longevity. I still didn't want my own salon. That was like an absolute no-no, because I've got like dyscalculia with numbers, like dyslexia with numbers. So it's really not my forte at all. You know, it really stresses me out. And I was like, no, I can't.
We have calculators now. You don't need an abacus.
Yeah.
If you have a calculator there, and it, like, predictive text now, like, I, you know what I mean? I have apps for everything there. You know what I mean? Like, so if I want to work out the margins on something, I have a gross profit calculator.
Yeah.
It works it out straight for you. So it's like, salon ownership now is not about having to be in accountants. No. It's just understanding what accountants want.
And basically, the boss that I had at the time, like, his salon wasn't doing very well. And basically, he got the Barnetts in, David and Nicole Barnett. He got them to come in and coach. And so basically, as a stylist, I did the coaching. And basically, what happened was that they, obviously working with them, they worked with all the stylists to kind of bring them on. And then so during my coaching with them, they just really built me up, and they almost make you look at yourself as like a third person. So whereas like about yourself, you probably think you're not very good at this and you look at all your worst points, okay? They literally just said to me, like, what are you doing? Like, you're brilliant. You're going to absolutely smash it. What are you scared of? And then I said to them, I'm scared of failure. That's what I'm scared of. I'm scared of failing. And everybody laughing at me. And then they were like, it's okay if people laugh at you because you're still going to be awesome, you know? And they basically showed me basically what I was made of, as sad as that sounds. They made me look at myself completely different. And then all of a sudden, my brother had a business deal go through. And he basically turned around to me a couple of weeks after I'd started this coaching, and I was getting banging results. Like, I doubled my figures behind the chair from like $8,000 to like $16,000 within about 8 weeks following their systems.
Yeah.
And then so my brother turned around to me and went, if you want to do a salon, I will lend you $100,000 to do it, but you have to decide in 48 hours. And I was still saying no up until literally about 5 minutes before the clock ran out. And then I literally just thought, sod it, I'm all in, I'm doing it.
And that's it. And then you had to go and build a team from that. So that leads into the next question. If you were to go back 2.5 years, which is not a long period, so it should be very fresh, is there anything you think you would do differently now if you're going into it?
Yeah, I mean, this is all to do with team, Greg. Like, I made, it wasn't like terrible mistakes, right? But I was so scared that nobody was going to want to play in my sandpit, right? I was like, nobody's going to want to play with me. Nobody's going to want me to be their boss. I'm going to be on my own. This is going to be so embarrassing, right? I was embarrassed, honestly. That sounds like really ego-ish, doesn't it? But I was mortified. I was thinking, oh my God. So to be honest, anybody who applied, I just took them on, basically. So I made some big mistakes with that.
Yeah.
One of the biggest mistakes with that with people, right, was there was this wonderful stylist who are still besties with, hairy besties with her now, but I took this person on. And she was a great stylist, always turned up on time, was always really supportive, never moaned. You know, she on paper, she was the perfect employee, right? But because of our ethos and branding and the way we're all like full on jazz hands, okay, and really media heavy, okay, she was just mortified at all of this. She hated it. Yeah. And then after about 7 months, she pulled me aside. Honestly, it was really funny. We laugh at it now. But she was like, Sophie, like, it's not you, it's me. She gave me it all like that. Like, she was breaking up with me. And she was like, I think you're amazing. I think you're an amazing businesswoman. You are the best boss I've ever had. And I love you very, very much. But I can't cope here. Because you are crazy.
There's a salon fit for everybody. It doesn't mean that everybody fits you in the salon, but there's somewhere that where they can go and be that.
Yeah, and Greg, do you know what she said to me? And this was really stuck with me, and this might help someone, right? So she turned around to me, because don't forget, at that time, we only had 5 chairs. It's tiny, this salon. And she went, Sophie, what you've got to understand is that every minute I'm taking up that chair, okay, and even though you're getting consistent money and it's good for business and we all get on, there's no arguing, I'm stopping you from finding your people. And I need to go. You need to let me go. I could actually cry talking about it. It was really like moving.
That's very honest of her.
Yeah. And so we're still besties. Now she comes on all my education, you know, and all that. She thinks she loves it. She follows us and everything. And do you know what? She was so right. Honestly, you know, after that, after she went, I basically then took two stylists from another salon, not the same salon. And in the beginning, that was good. But again, it was almost like you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Okay, so I couldn't make them brand heavy. I couldn't make them, you know, really believe in our ethos and stuff like that. They wanted to do it all their own way. Okay, so with both of those ones as well, I tried to shape them into something that they weren't moldable to be shaped into, basically. And I lost them at different times, you know, that ended with me actually sacking them in the end, both of those ones. But while all this was going on, I was training my assistants. Okay. So I was like literally training them all the time. Yeah. And because they don't know any different, because they were like a seed and I've watered them with sass since they were 16, right? They've grown into wonderful sass pots. You know, and I literally don't even need to be in my own salon with them because, you know, they're just got it cooking on gas, you know, they know exactly what to do, how to do it the way we are, how we are and everything. So at the moment there's me, Hannah and Chloe, they're all homegrown. And then we've got two like junior members of the team and they will be qualified this year. So it'll be a team of five then.
Oh, that's fantastic. And how many seats have you got in the salon now?
We've got seven.
So seven seats. And is there room for expansion then if you wanted to or?
No, but what we're talking about doing is doing less days, longer days.
Yeah.
More people in and do some kind of rota system or something. So like we all get a weekend off a month.
I think this pandemic has made us all really look at the hours we work and the way we work it. You know what I mean? And we can just be more clever, you know, and people seem to want that. You know what I mean?
So we'd rather do like three really long days, like three 12-hour days, right, for everybody or slightly over that. And then have like 4 days off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be with your family, you know.
Well, yeah, that's what you hope to do.
Yeah.
So leading into that, then the next question then is, what makes an amazing salon to you based on your experience, the long experience you've had and many other salons where you're in? That's the key thing before Colour Me Sophie B.
Yeah, there's like 20, I think there's 24 in my village.
No, how many salons have you worked in?
I have worked in.
Yeah.
One, two, three, about six.
Six. So you know what makes it. When you 2.5 years ago, when you decided to go, you should have had a clear idea of to where you were pulling. You probably pulled ideas from each of them. You know,
I think mainly it's about kind of like with your branding and your ethos and stuff within your salon. It's being like true to yourselves. So not trying to be like everything to everybody. Okay, knowing exactly who your perfect client is. So for us, with our salon, okay, our perfect guest is probably somebody between the ages of 35 to 55. You know, she's a woman. She takes care of herself, but she doesn't take herself too seriously. You know, she loves to laugh. She's full on girl code, girl gang, you know. It's a bit like loose women in our salon. You know, one person's talking about a menopause, the other person's talking about, you know, losing her teeth or whatever. you know, and
if I go to visit the salon, I'm going to have to do what Peter Kay did when he went to Loose Women and come in as Geraldine.
Yeah, basically, it's exactly like that. And I know this is really un-PC, and it is, right, but it's a proper girls' salon, okay? Yeah, it's a girls' night in. We don't actually do men's hair, okay? Which I know at some point is going to shoot me in the foot because I know that's not PC and you shouldn't disclude anyone and all that, right? But also the way it is, like any men, even when the postman comes in, he hates it because he comes in and then one of the clients will be like, "Ooh, he's got shorts on, ooh," you know, or like that to the postie. So, you know, it's very uplifting, very motivating, you know, it makes you feel as good on the inside as you're going to look on the outside, really. So all of our branding, the luxury language we use, like the word sassy, you know, sassometer, anything with the word sass in it, you know, we're speaking to that guest. And I think if you can get that right, okay, 100% think that that is probably the most vital thing to being a successful salon, knowing who you are and what you do and who you're marketing to.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. Staying true to your, like the owner having a clear, defined vision and then putting the right people in place to share that vision and then move along with it. And that, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's the owner's vision and then finding the people who buy into that.
Exactly, exactly. It. It doesn't work if what I learned was it was better with less staff all on the same bus.
Yeah.
Okay, than loads of staff to look fancy, but then everything was going wrong. The client service was going wrong. The atmosphere was wrong, you know? So I learned that really quickly because I've only been open 2.5 years.
When you knew it was your brother, you had to repay the money to.
Oh my God, but you know, I'm so proud. Like, we have paid him off. Like, in 2.5 years, paid him off.
Excellent.
Even during all this COVID stuff. So I'm like really pleased with that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's very pleased.
Yeah.
and I think if I was him and I'd given you 100 grand, I'd be looking for him to reinvest back in and go, what can you do with the next 100 grand? But he'd probably want a bit of interest on it then at that stage.
I know.
So leading lovely into the next question, because I might have an idea where some of this might come from, but who are mentors to you? Over the course of your career, because let's not just say salon owner, but over your career, people that we might not know of and people we do know of.
Yeah, so I've been very, very lucky in my career. And I think you can look at mentors in different ways. So I like to think of it like hairy family, really. Okay, so in each salon I've worked in, there has been somebody that I've really looked up to, you know, that's kind of put their arm around me and being like, you know, maybe try things like this or do this, or I don't like the way you're doing that, or, you know. And I think, you know, one of the biggest empowering things as a hairdresser before you become a stylist owner, you know, a salon owner, is to, you know, really try and, you know, drop your ego and actually listen to these people around you, you know, especially the dinosaurs. They're the best ones. Okay. So rather than looking at them thinking, well, all right, what did you learn? You know, what do you know? You're not very current. To be honest, those are the people, okay, that I've got so much to teach. And, you know, and I was lucky enough that I was somebody that didn't get upset if somebody said I wasn't very good or I should do something different. I was always able to take criticism without getting like funny about it. I might have cried about it if they were particularly mean, but you know, I always then in hindsight thought, do you know what, you've got a point there, okay, I can do better, you know, with that. So like, throughout my career it's just been a mixture of stylists and stuff like that, nobody famous or fancy. Literally you wouldn't know them if I mentioned them. But funnily enough, I would probably say the last kind of 4 years, obviously it's been high performance stylist with David and Nicole, because they have been my coaches for about 4 years now. Okay, and so they coached me as a stylist, and they knew that obviously I was gonna open the salon. They coached me all the way through that as well. Obviously I do high performance educator to coach me on my education with Chris Moody as well. And also weirdly, because I've absolutely smashed it with all the coaching, and there isn't one part of the coaching I've not done, they made me a coach.
Excellent. We're HBS. With HBS, yeah. That's excellent. Yeah. No, that's excellent, because that's what you know what I mean. It's like, for any young salon owner out there, I feel that I was lucky in the sense that I was a manager with one of the biggest companies in Ireland, Park, and you know, people had left before me that were very inspirational to me. So when I chose to leave, it was that I had that network of people to follow, and not everybody has that. No. And I would say, if you don't have it, go and find it. You know what I mean? Because like back then, years ago, like we joined 365. So we had to go to London once a month for nearly 14 months.
Why?
We, you know, drop our kids were only, so we had three young children, and we'd great. My parents-in-law were excellent for mining them. And yeah, we built a little network there, but we got some amazing education, understanding budgets, understanding tiered pricing, understanding what you're worth. You know what I mean? And because that wasn't, now I look at it, now it's available. Now it's like, you don't even have to leave. Like, look at us now. And I still think there is a place, because we're huggy feely people, that we can't wait. We're like caged animals now. We can't wait for the, we lift off the, can you imagine the forced hairdressing event when people arrive
and it's gonna and go off,
you know, run off and hug everybody, you know. So it's gonna be amazing, but it is, we still have this facility, and that's why I'd encourage any young salon owner to, you know, find the people that share their dream. You know, as you just say, your top stylist, that's a great friend of yours now,
yeah,
wasn't the right fit for your business. And I really admire her seeing that.
Yeah.
We are good friends, but for you to find, and I can see it in the post you put up of the young team. The energy is there in the photograph. You know what I mean? It's there in the photograph. And
woo!
And it's everybody's culture slightly different. You know what I mean? And that's, yeah, it. You've got a really strong culture. So moving on to now, when we reopened, for us, it was July. I'm not too sure what it was in the UK. But since you reopened, the amount of work we had to put in place to reopen.
Ugh.
Right? To now, you know, to when that happened and that whole, like, I'm reading a book at the moment, is what you say when you talk to yourself. And
yeah,
at the moment, my wife is now starting to get into it as well, and self-talk. And I've always done a bit of self-talk to myself, and sometimes not always in a positive manner.
No.
I feel that we need to look at the, you know, what are the glass half full moments of when the doors reopened that you'd say, wow, that was worth it, you know?
So going back to my culture and stuff, like, I always wanted to have a salon where the staff felt valued and respected, you know, and that was a two-way street, you know. I didn't want to run my salon like a dictatorship, you know. I wanted people to have the same empathy for me that I would for them, okay? So the biggest thing, it makes me really emotional talking about it, was when... So when I knew we could reopen, I'd looked at all the figures and I thought, shit, this is going to be horrific, right? Obviously, that, like, we all had a meeting and I said to them, okay, look, we've literally really only got one option, okay? We need to see all these clients. That's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, like, so what I really could do with is us all working the whole of July, like 28 days straight, no day off. Okay, and I'll make it worth your while, right? Because I always play fair, right?
Yeah.
And I'll do whatever it takes. Okay, I will, whatever you want. Okay, name it. Okay, we'll do it. You can have it. Don't care. Okay, but that, we need to see these clients. And they all turned round to me, like all four of them, and went, you don't even need to ask us. Okay, well, we're in this, whatever you want. We don't even want anything. Let's just do it. Let's roll with it. You know, and I'm not joking. I don't even want to, I think we did so many hours, Greg. Honestly, we were like doing like 7 a.m. till like midnight. It was crazy shit, right? And they never moaned. All I had to do was keep the Domino's coming. Domino's, McDonald's, just keep the food coming. And they were just incredible. So we did nearly 45,000. Between two stylists, that was in July.
You'd only two stylists?
Yeah, because the others are juniors at that time.
All right, Jesus, that is amazing. But they obviously, they can apply colour, they can do some colour.
A bit, so they could do toners and things like that, yeah, but they wouldn't do the main colour work. But it was literally me and Hannah on the floor. And then Chloe wasn't qualified at that point. She was qualifying in September. So she did a little bit. But again, because of social distancing, we couldn't use all the chairs anyway. So we couldn't do that. So I was so proud. And I still am so proud. I will never, ever stop being proud of how we literally dug deep, pulled together, got stuck in, got the money.
That proves the point of my old mentor, Simon Sinek, is that employ people who believe in what you believe and they will work night and day.
Yeah.
Employ people because you're paying well and they'll just work for your money. And that,
they trust
the trust is there that they will get the reward, but let's get the work done first. And that's amazing. You know what I mean? That you for a business so like 2.5 years to have a team like that, it's only going to get better for you. So that is it. That's not even a glass half full moment. That's a glass overflowing. To do those figures.
Glass.
What?
Get me another glass.
Actually, the glass outside there is about that size. I don't know who gave it to us, but I was cleaning it. What's that meant for? Jesus, that's for a liter of wine. It fit into that. Now, leading in, would you believe we're on our seventh question?
You know?
So, this one I know you're going to have a great answer for. I know you are, because I've been following you and I'm watching you and I'm seeing what you're doing. Is what would you like the future to hold for the next 12 months for you and your business?
So, obviously, I launched my education business, which is just, you never believe it yourself, do you? I cannot believe. I feel like I'm like, take that, and my tickets are selling out all the time. So, obviously, I'm going to launch more education, because it's just going down so bloody brilliantly. So, I'm going to launch more of that. I've got another couple of classes coming up. I think it's like the 1st and 2nd of December. I'm doing another two. I literally just launched those this morning. So, if you're interested for your team or whatever, get stuck into that. But also, I launched my own hair and beauty product company during the first lockdown, called Product Junkie. And so I'm literally in the middle of sorting all that out and seeing where I can go with that. So I'm super excited about that. But the biggest thing really this year is to hit my 3-year goal. So when I wrote my goals 3 years ago, my 3-year goal was to be in a position where I can drop another day behind the chair. Mm-hmm. And even after all this corona and everything going on, this is looking like it is actually going to happen by the spring. So then I'll be 3 days behind the chair. And the other days I will be in the salon floating about. But I really want to make this year about my team. You know, really, the way they've pulled together for me and the business and us to keep us going. You know, I want Hannah, my stylist, to do her Weller Masters next year. She'll be 19 by the time she does that. So I want her to do that. And my stylist, Chloe, she's like really into cutting. So I really want to be looking at more cutting education for her and get her really like specializing in that. And then also the other thing is bringing my two assistants up to, stylist level by the end of this year, next year, sorry. So by the end of 2021, they'll be qualified too, you know, and then we can just have a lovely, sassy life together. Yeah.
I'm going to add a little bit onto that, because I think for a younger salon owner who might not have, but like, I think it's nearly 2K following, have you, on your Instagram?
We've got three and a bit.
Well, okay, sorry then if I got it wrong, but how, like, to sell out that education, okay, we know that Chris and David have given us great guidance on how to put on education, but how do you think, you know, what has made that sell out for you? What has made Sophie be pro sticky? You know what I mean? What's catching in? What can he do, a salon owner, to say? Because let's face it, Sully Hill, it's not London, it's not Manchester, it's Midlands, Birmingham.
Yeah.
You're in a small town, high street town, I'd imagine.
It's a tiny little village. It's like a tiny little village.
But yet the world is your oyster, because, yeah. So what would you key that down to?
Well, when I did my Weller Masters about eight, nine years ago, I branded myself as Sophie B. That's where the whole Sophie B thing came from. I did my Weller Masters, okay, smashed that, okay. Got like the highest mark of the year in that, and made loads of friends through Weller and things like that. And then I was like, right, I need a name, like Madonna. What can I be called? How is everybody going to know me, you know? So Sophie B. And then I thought, no, that's not good enough. Okay, I need something else. It needs to, you know, and that's where the whole Colour Me Sophie B thing came from. Okay, I literally thought of that in the back while I was working for someone else. But it's having, even if you work for someone else, okay, you've got stylists within your business, you know, that you're kind of thinking like you want to get out there and you want them to do education within your business. It's almost really important to have a mini brand within a brand and let your staff do that. So that went crazy then. So I started posting that on social, and in our local area, nobody was doing that at that time. So I did like, I got a celebrity picture and then I did a copycat. Okay. So I did that for ages and I got known for that just with clients and stuff. And then I started just going on all the hair forums online and doing a lot of blogs and things like that. So this hasn't been a quick thing. I've been known in social media land, which doesn't even exist, does it? It's crazy, right? But within those platforms, I made sure I was consistent posting every day. You're signing off with the same thing, calling me Sophie B, you know, and that was the thing. So that's been going about 10 years. So to be honest, when I launched this education, all that groundwork that I'd done over the last 10 years, I was lucky because a lot of people knew me anyway and were already like anchored in to seeing how authentic I was. You know, and again, Greg, I'm not being funny. You either really like me or think I'm an idiot, right? I'm like Marmite, okay? But it's true. Again, you know, with the salon, you've got to find your tribe. With your education, you got to find your tribe, you know? People that like my courses, because they're nuts, right? And it's really sweary and it's crazy and it's like you're laughing. It's like a hairy pantomime while you're learning. Everyone's shouting out and heckling. It's all like that. So for every 10 people that love my courses, right, and will pay £100, £200 to come on them, there's going to be 10 that think I'm an absolute idiot. And that's fine. Yeah. And I've learned that through my journey as a salon owner. And I've learned it now as an educator. You just got to find your tribe. Okay.
Yeah. We hit on that last week with Chris, actually, when we were talking about the salon down the road for you not being your enemy and like this group community. And I think the first time I actually thought of hairdresser community would be through Andrew Dunn with the Wella page, which I'm not even a Wella customer, but yeah, I love sitting in on Andrew's Sunday service. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's just that we share common beliefs and we feel safe within. This is a nice environment to be in. And I think that what you've done with Colour Me Sophie B is you've created that brand within your own area.
Yeah.
Now with the education, you're attracting the like-minded people in. We're not one size fits all. Because if it was, the world would be a very dull and boring place. So I think it's defined now. What you've done is you've nailed how to attract the right people into the Sophie B education. And actually, that could be a stylist who's in a salon that's not calling me Sophie B.
Yeah.
But they want to be that stylist in that salon. And here's the opportunity, because the salon owner might not see that. I might not understand. So what I know there's not stylists on here, but definitely what I would say to salon owners out there is listen to what your young people are looking for. And you can't send them that. We used to have to send them to London, now it's there. It's there.
Salon owners have been sending their staff to me. I find this crazy. So like, you know, when you've got a stylist and they've just lost their way. They just get like really a bit lapsy daisy and they've got no drive and they don't know if they want to be hairdresser anymore, you know, and all that. Okay. I've had literally two salon owners send their stylist to me on Zoom, right? And to sort them out.
that is it. You know what I mean? Like that's I learned that in my Peter Mark days years ago, is that the longer I became a manager, the more I got dumped other people's problems.
Yeah.
Like there's a lady had a problem over in that salon over there, but we're sending it to you to look at. And what I've always said is some of the strongest clients I ever had were clients that came to me through complaints. Because you rectify, and that's what I'm saying. Some of the strongest people you will have to educate were people who had a weakness there, or somebody just didn't feel the confidence that they could resonate your personality. Because five people could show them how to do the exact same thing, but just the personality didn't click in with them.
Exactly. And the salon owner said to me, which I found, I'm never going to start laughing at this. Okay. She went, well, do you know what's really good about you? And I was like, what? She was like, you speak hairdresser. I was like, what? What does that even mean? And she was like, because you're not normal. You speak hairdresser. So my staff who you've done this course with, they're all like completely like Sophie B believers, you know, and they just think you're great. And they've come back and I could have told them exactly what you've told them, but they don't listen to me because I don't speak hairdresser. I speak boss and you speak hairdresser. And I think that's your unique selling point. So you heard it here first.
Well, there you go. And as I said to you about dogs often coming into the equation, I have one down here at my feet. He's wandering around as if to say, what are you doing? You nearly finished there. So I'm going to let you go because I'm sure the Sophie B world does not stop and it's on a juggernaut going. And I have no doubt, and I have to thank you, Sophie, because it's been really, really enjoyable. Because for me to find a salon owner that's, you know, really in the infancy in years, but has massive amount of experience behind them, but has a clear vision of where you want to go. I wish you all the best of success because I know it's going to come to you. I know it's coming your way. And listen, thanks so much for the time. And I'm sure we'll be meeting on HPE soon.
Oh, yeah.
Turn the ear off, Mr. Barnett and Mr. Moody. So have a great week and I'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to our interview with Sophie B of Colour Me Sophie B. If you're enjoying our interviews, don't keep it to yourself. Please subscribe to our channel and share with our fellow Salon Soul brothers and sisters around the globe. Thank you so much for your time.